Hi. So we're continuing with the coronavirus theme. We're in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. One of the major aspects of the outsourcing and BPO industry are the offices that they work from and occupy. Manila is full now of gleaming A-grade office towers, which are largely sitting empty and unoccupied as a result of the enhanced quarantine. BPOs are wondering whether they need to pay full lease to the landlords, and as well, clients who now have their staffing working from home are wondering whether they need to pay the full service fee going to the BPO supplier. So there's a big crunch in office costs, and this is one of the major cost contributors to outsourcing and the outsourcing industry. So to help me with this, I have got Morgan McGilvray back with me. He is in charge of office leasing at Santos Knight Frank. Morgan has unparalleled experience and insight into the office leasing space in Manila in the Philippines. So it's great to have him on the show. I certainly learned a lot in talking to him, and I've got a lot more color now of the situation of the market. If you want any of the show notes for this podcast, of course, as always, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. Enjoy. This podcast is brought to you by Payoneer, the leading global B2B payment solution for the outsourcing industry. If you're a BPO or freelancer or have outsourced staffing, then Payoneer makes sending and receiving international payments super simple, quick, secure, and of course, low cost. They have some fantastic features which have been designed specifically for the needs of this industry. You can easily manage payments between your clients, staff, and suppliers across multiple currencies and international bank accounts. Payoneer help make outsourcing easy, so consider them now. And if your BPO, clients, or suppliers aren't already using Payoneer, then ask them why not. For a limited time, Payoneer is offering a $50 bonus if you sign up now. So go to register.payoneer.com/OA or go to our website and we will have links there. Hi and welcome back, everybody. Today I'm joined again by Morgan McGilvray of Santos Knight Frank. Hi, Morgan. How are you?
Hey, Derek. Thanks for having me back. I'm good.
You are with Office Leasing of Santos Knight Frank. We are in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. We are nearly, I believe, at the fourth week of the enhanced quarantine measure, where effectively everyone has been banned from going to work apart from the essential services. And the enhanced quarantine has been extended, but there's a lot of uncertainty around office space. And the outsourcing industry is critically reliant on office space, and there's been a lot of movement towards work from home and adaptation to that. So there's a lot of questions around what is happening with office space. Are there rent reliefs available? And just a lot of conversation around this whole piece. So I'm really grateful to have you in so that we can discuss this and hopefully shed some light. Morgan, I suppose initially, do you want to just give us a quick update in terms of how you see the coronavirus in terms of it playing out with the office leasing situation?
Yeah, sure. And you gave a good summary there. One thing I'd point out, luckily for you and me and our sector in the BPO industry, is that BPO has generally been defined as an essential service by the Philippine government. And that means that companies in the BPO industry have generally been allowed to continue to operate, including keeping skeleton forces going inside their normal office spaces, even during this lockdown or enhanced community quarantine. So, whereas other industries have been completely shut out, BPO has been allowed to keep going, and I think that's because the president and the government understands how critical this industry is to the Philippine economy and livelihood. And so there have been some carve-outs, and that's been quite good. But you've also said correctly that a lot of the work has still been moved to work from home. There are various reasons for that. One is that it is difficult for employees to get back and forth between home and the office because most of the public transportation has been shut down. And because, you know, internet connections and the like from Filipinos' homes nowadays are much, much better than they were 10 years ago. Working from home is more realistic, and especially in an emergency situation like now, where the bar is set a little lower as to what would be needed to empower a BPO agent to work from home. So between that work from home and the skeleton force services going from the offices, we have seen a decent amount of continuity going in the BPO sector, and that's been quite good. The buildings have generally remained open as well. So it's just a question of whether a given tenant, BPO or otherwise, can get into the office and run operations. And I bring that all up because when it comes to kind of how this COVID is affecting the market, well, not a lot of time has passed yet. It's only been a month, and there hasn't really been time in my mind for anything drastic to have happened. The businesses are mostly focused on just keeping operations going, probably making sure that they can continue to get paid from their clients. And they may be looking for rental relief and the like from their landlords, you know, in the very near term. But in terms of drastic impact, drastic moves in the market, there just hasn't been enough time, and we're not seeing that yet. So we're not really seeing bankruptcies. We're not seeing any kind of lease terminations or anything that drastic. Instead, we're just seeing minor efforts at rental relief, you know, maybe giving the landlords are giving the tenants a little bit of extra time to pay. Maybe they're waiving kind of interest and penalties on late payments. And then they're having a lot of wait and see conversations with the tenants about, you know, whether more structural relief is going to be needed or whether we're going to come out of this, let's say, on the 1st of May, in which case drastically restructuring contracts and other more significant measures may indeed not be necessary because the lockdown was just a month and a half and then we bounced out of it.
There's quite a lot of price and cost mismatch from, you know, the feedback that I'm getting from a lot of the outsourcing suppliers, the BPOs. Of course, now they've moved all of their staff out to the work from home. That's been a huge operation for them to execute that. But the clients are now asking for a reduction in their fees if the staff aren't using the offices. And they're only getting effectively half a service as perceived by the clients. Why do they need to pay the full amount? But of course, you know, all of these leases are still in action. The companies still have the liability. So I'm seeing a bit of an imbalance in terms of perceived value. And, you know, I see also some clients that realize that working from home isn't so bad. They're not getting compromised productivity the same, and they're wondering whether they really need to return to the offices. Do you see that, you know, as you mentioned, there is a sort of ticking time bomb to this? How do you see the landlords positioned and the BPOs? Are people trying to get out of offices, or it is just wait and see, as you say?
Yeah, I think it's too early to say people are trying to get out of their office leases, except in some extreme examples where, you know, the client maybe operates in an industry that is particularly hit hard, like travel, hospitality, etc. But you're right, because, you know, the underlying assumption in a lot of these mismatches is that, oh, well, you know, the company that provides services to me, their costs must be down, therefore I can pay them less. And I think that assumption might be, well, your workers in the BPO industry are all working from home, so you don't have these office expenses, you don't have these transportation allowances, so why am I paying you a normal rate when you're being the BPO provider, your costs are down by 50%. But I think that's a bit misguided in most cases, because a lot of the BPO's experience with their landlord is that rent is still due. Now, it might be deferred a little bit, but we're not seeing rents automatically being cut in half or waived entirely, because the landlords have the same position, which is, well, you know, we're keeping our building open. We have expenses. We have employees. We have mortgages, et cetera. we need to collect rent in full. We need to collect building dues in full so that we can pay the people we owe money. So we're not interested in receiving a discount in most cases on our incomings. And so because of that, the BPO is kind of stuck in the middle. Well, they've got, you know, pretty much full expenses to their landlord. They've still got their own operating expenses. And then they've got clients who are saying, well, we don't want to pay you the normal amount. So that's the tricky situation. And I just would hope to preach understanding, which is that most people's expenses are at normal levels, despite in a lot of cases, the revenue's going down. So everyone's in a tricky spot and no one really wants to relent unless they absolutely have to. And I don't think enough time has passed yet to where there's going to be a lot of relenting until we've got a much clearer picture about how this quarantine, how long it's going to last, and therefore we can start to do more and more cost projections on whether the status quo will be viable or eventually it no longer will be viable and people will have to make more significant moves.
Yeah, that makes sense. I wanted to get you on the show, Morgan, because of this conversation. Obviously, half of our audience is based in the Philippines and partaking in the outsourcing industry, and this is valuable information, but also the client side is, you know, wondering about how these costs all contribute and what the situation is in terms of the flexibilities of BPOs and their liabilities as well. So it's good to explore this. What are the any official guidelines by the government? I understand the DTI has brought out a guideline in terms of rent relief. Do you see these as real? Do you see them as enforceable? How are they playing a part?
Yeah, so there have been a few DTI, Department of Trade and Industry, there have been a few memoranda about rents, mostly focused on the retail sector more so than the office. And as you said, they've generally been guidelines as well and not necessarily laws or mandates or whatnot. So one thing we did see early on was that via a DTI circular was that tenants in malls and that kind of retail tenant who were going to have to shut down as being not essential, they are being given rental waivers. And that's going to be from the big mall, you know, the big malls like the Ayala malls and the SM malls are generally going to have to waive retail rents for shopping malls. But in terms of office space, the closest thing I've seen to any kind of government intervention is for small and medium-sized enterprises. And medium-sized is defined by the DTI as having about 100 million pesos in assets, including debt, on the balance sheet. So about 2 million US dollars, which most firms are going to be, you know, most firms that you and I deal with are going to be significantly larger than that. But in the case of SMEs, they are being asked to be given a grace period to make payments without interest and penalties. But that's it. So just a little bit more time. And that's really the only government intervention we've seen. We've seen stronger intervention in other countries around Southeast Asia, but here not so much. So for those firms who do need more relief, it's going to have to be undertaken privately in a discussion between themselves and their landlords, because at the moment we don't see the government is getting too far involved with the office sector.
And so the BPO is facing a bit of a difficult situation because they are exempted under the enhanced quarantine, which I suppose is a bonus, but functionally a lot of these offices are sitting empty because, as you say, there's not the infrastructure or the public transport to bring the workers in. So it could leave them in a difficult position where, you know, functionally the office is available, but they're not able to use it. And the DTI, and as you say, the guidance doesn't really apply to this size of business. Previously, we spoke, we mentioned that there was an increase in supply in the Ortigas area, one of the big CBDs. I assume that's still coming online now. But also, there's a, is it true, how has the POGO sector been affected? So I just want to explore the supply side of this equation in terms of businesses out there.
Okay, yeah, we did talk about Ortigas because even before COVID and the quarantine, I had identified Ortigas as having a notable supply and demand mismatch. The supply was going to far exceed the demand, probably over the next 3 or 4 years in the Ortigas district. In terms of why that is, well, there just happened to be about six large office buildings coming online in that district, let's say worth 500,000 square meters, in a district that traditionally takes up between 75,000 to 125,000 new square meters per annum. So you can see where the supply outpaces the demand in Ortigas, and I'd been pointing to that as an area to get some opportunities for tenants. Well, at the moment, so construction would have stopped on all these buildings, but yes, I think it's generally assumed that they all will be brought to completion because enough of them are far enough along in their construction process that probably doesn't make sense to back out and leave construction a half-constructed building anymore. And so because of that, yeah, we'll see these buildings all come online. Probably best case scenario now would be Q4 of 2020. More likely buildings will all be delayed by anywhere from 4 to 6 months because of the COVID situation. And so we're going to see a lot of Ortigas stock in 2021. In which case, the landlords are going to have to get much more realistic about their expectations for rents. A lot of them wanted, let's say, 1,000 pesos per square as an asking rate, and maybe they would have settled for 900. I think you have to chop that number down by 30 to 40% right away when the market picks up again. That will be the new norm for Ortigas, and that's the combination of kind of probably potentially lackluster demand here, but also just the oversupply. So the same issue that was going to affect that market even before COVID. But what also goes into that, Derek, and you mentioned correctly, is this Pogo, the Philippine offshore gaming operators industry, which has been taking up over 500,000 square meters per annum the last at least the last year, and probably the last 2 years ago. And they had really been driving our market in terms of the demand and the new take up. And not only are they the Pogo industry is it's meant to be shut down, they are not exempted from the lockdown. And in fact, they've been explicitly told by the government not to operate during the lockdown. And so that is going to be a real problem for them because not only do they occupy over probably 1 million square meters in this market that they cannot use right now, but they've even been told not to try to operate from homes, from their employees' home. Which is very different from the BPO sector. And so we are going to probably see that industry struggle. It's notoriously cash rich, so they've probably got bigger cushions to sit on than a lot of other industries. But not only are they going to be struggling during the lockdown, but even when they come out of it, they were always about to run into problems with a lack of supply, office supply in the areas that will accept POGOs. In addition to much more difficult visa entry requirements from the Philippine government and just the inability to fly from China to the Philippines because of the travel restrictions. So we would expect to see the Pogo industry's numbers to be way down in 2020 as compared to in 2019 when they took up over 500,000 square meters. And because that Pogo industry's down, that also leads to an additional kind of supply and demand mismatch where demand is down relative to supply. Which also usually leads to falling rents eventually.
A lot of people have been talking about force majeure. A lot of contracts have a clause in them saying that under, extreme circumstances, which is defined as force majeure, contracts potentially aren't valid or there is an exit. Now, there's been a lot of discussion about this as soon as the enhanced quarantine was even mentioned. So it's on the radar of a lot of people. Is there any sort of greater clarity or any guidance in terms of the force majeure clauses within contracts, whether it applies or how to apply it?
So that was one of the first things I was saying when the lockdown began was that tenants should check their contract of lease with their landlord to see what it says, and specifically the force majeure clause. And what they should be looking for is hopefully specific references to pandemic or epidemic in the force majeure clause to make sure that the current situation falls under the scope. What we're finding, I think, unfortunately for tenants, is that probably about 90% of the contracts don't specifically say pandemic or epidemic. They tend to be written instead for physical destruction of the office premises, such as via an earthquake or a typhoon or something like that. And so then it becomes more of a little bit more of a legal interpretation battle about whether something like a pandemic in which the government has shut down not only the citizenry, but shut down certain industries in some case, despite the building not being harmed, and despite even in some cases the building being open for operations, does that fall under force majeure, i.e. an act of God? And I can't advise on that one, one, because I'm not a lawyer, but also because it then tends to get into a little bit more about how the specific clause is written. And so I say all this because I still do think tenants should check their clause, and hopefully there's something written about pandemic or epidemic or something similar enough. That's probably your best way into approaching a landlord about rent relief. But if it doesn't have that specific wording in it, and most don't, then it's a little bit more of a legal battle that you have to look into with your in-house attorney or external counsel and have a discussion with the landlord.
Are you seeing any difference in landlord behavior or responsiveness in terms of the nature of the landlord, whether they're, you know, independent small landholders or whether it's the big groups? And I suppose specifically, are the big groups, do they have any policies generally, or is it case by case and also they're on a wait and see stage as well?
This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
Yeah, we're not seeing a ton of consistency among the big developers, even when the developer's nature is very similar. So, you know, it could be the top, let's say, three developers in the country. It doesn't mean that all three of those developers are acting in similar manner with regard to how they're handling this lockdown and also how they're handling tenant requests. We do, as my team of brokers, we compare notes about how conversations are going with the landlords, and we found that some are being quite stubborn is not the right word, but they're not relenting easily at all. And in fact, one or two just haven't given any concessions yet to speak of that we know of. Whereas others who maybe have the same balance sheet, same nature, generally big, wealthy conglomerate developers, others have been starting to extend out grace periods and maybe even listen to conversations about blend and extend or other kinds of restructuring where they're not really waiving the rent due, they're just allowing it to be postponed, or they're waiving it in the very short term, but then capturing that money back in later parts of a lease so that they don't have to actually get short paid, they just get paid on a different time scale. So I would have thought that landlord's response would have been more easily categorized based on the nature of the landlord, where the big guys that are sitting on a lot of cash would have been a little bit more easygoing about it, whereas the boutique developers who have got, you know, debt to service and whatnot might have had to be a little less forgiving because they have to stay in business as well. But we're finding that's not the case. Some of the boutiques have been very generous. Some of the big developers have not been, and therefore it's really a case-by-case basis based on the landlord and their interpretation of the situation. But I'll end by saying there is a ton of wait and see still. And because we're seeing this quarantine, you know, it was announced for a month and then we saw it get extended by 2 weeks up until April 30th. You know, we're still wondering, is it going to get extended again and by how long? Because if we had more certainty around that, if we were told that, oh yeah, it's going to be extended by two more months from, let's say, May 1st, then the landlords might say, okay, that's enough for us to know that something needs to be done. Whereas if it's wait and see until May 1st, you don't want to commit to, as a landlord, a developer, they might not want to commit to anything too substantial, only to find out that it's business as usual again by May 1, yet they've restructured their contracts as though the quarantine would last a lot longer.
A lot of BPOs are really slashing costs. They're cutting back. They're having to ditch units. But you know, there's certain players in the market, whether they're well capitalized or you know they've been waiting for a rainy day such as this. They're looking to seize opportunities, whether that be in the shape of existing businesses or just sites and to push an expansion. Do you see opportunities coming through in the market yet? Are there incredible deals to be had if people are in the market? Or again, are you just thinking it's a little bit too early and people are just like a deer in the headlights at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I find it's a little bit too early and all the parties are still trying to feel this thing out. It's been pretty clear to me that no one has really gone through anything like this before, whether it be a BPO, their clients, or a landlord. And so in this first month, it's just kind of checking on how's everyone doing, who needs what, before any action has been taken. When we come out of this, yeah, those firms who have got some money to spend, I would imagine there's going to be some consolidation and some opportunity for sure. I think that new concepts may even come to this market, such as tenant improvement allowances, which is quite common in a lot of the other parts of the world, but generally has not been a thing here in the Philippines. Well, now the companies come out of it, you know, they may be looking to expand, but they don't necessarily have a few million dollars sitting around for capital expenditure to fit out a new office. So either they go and they find someone else's old offices, and there'll be a little bit of that, or they start to work with developers and say, look, okay, maybe it's time to not only drop our rents a little bit from pre-COVID, but also talk about other kinds of concessions so that we can take a new lease with you, Mr. Developer, but we don't have to have this huge CapEx outlay at the beginning, which we normally would have if leasing, let's say, a brand new shell space in a new building. So I see that kind of opportunity as much as anything else. But I think you and I also know that the Philippines sometimes also does well post-global crisis. And we saw that as early as 2010 here in the Philippines, whereas the rest of the world recovered, more and more opportunities were given to Filipino call center agents to get up and working. That went really well for the last decade. And I wouldn't be surprised to see more of that as well post-COVID.
Yeah, and you know, this is one of the potentially silver linings to this crowd is that the outsourcing industry is a counter-cyclical industry. It should do well and really shine in times of global recession because ultimately, you know, it's a fantastic way of saving money. And businesses in the West, as they look to rebuild, they're going to do everything they can to save costs. So I think that you know, it's a over the medium term, the outsourcing industry is positioned well. The Philippines is positioned well, but obviously it's going to be a bumpy ride before we get there. And you know, of course, there's going to be some winners and some big losers. Have you seen any obvious winners from your perspective? Now, you know, there are obviously winners within the economy, like Zoom is an obvious example. But I suppose in the property market, everyone's kind of in the same boat, really, aren't they? It's harder to pick out winners and losers within the property sphere.
Yeah, it is a bit tougher. At first glance, so some of the big winners are going to be firms that had a large Philippine presence with, I think, even bandwidth to expand. And what I mean by that is, you know, as these multinationals are focused on problems they've got in New York and London and Hong Kong, right? If they've got the Philippines as a business continuity location, and they can just move more and more work there quickly, In that regard, the Philippines wins because of the multinationals who want to do even more out of Manila as a hedge against problems they may be having in other parts of the world. So we look at those kind of firms as potentially coming out ahead. And then also, yeah, just, I mean, the third-party outsourcing operators, and we have a lot of them too, if they can survive, if they can make the numbers work and come out of this, then, yeah, we see opportunities for them as well. Again, just from demand around the world, potentially even some of the demand or the seats that have been going to India. You know, if India isn't able to stay operating the way the Philippines has as they go into their own version of this crisis, companies have been known to move seats from India to Philippines and back again quite often. Well, it could be time to move more seats to the Philippines because the Philippine operations have generally been able to keep going quite well. And also this country, quite fortunately, the COVID numbers and even the deaths are quite low by world standard, thank goodness. And so because of that, we've had a lot better continuity, I would say, than other markets around the world. And therefore, the firms that have that capacity to grow here in the short term will benefit from this.
Anecdotally, I have heard from a lot of the BPOs I talk with that they're seeing drop-offs of somewhere between 20% and, you know, maybe as much as 50%. A lot of, obviously, all of their clients now are currently working from home. We might not see all of those clients return back into an office environment. So, you know, let's use a figure of around about 30 to 40% drop in seats or space used. If the industry, if it means that the industry loses about 30% of the BPO capacity, and BPO being, you know, one of the biggest single tenants in the Philippine economy, how do you think it's going to look in a year's time when all of this washes over and there's kind of a 30% extra capacity in the market? Do you see any major changes, or how would you interpret the kind of medium term once everything settles?
Yeah, I mean, 30%, and let's just say that turns out to be true, sounds like a high number, but I guess in some ways, fortunately for this market, you're going worst case scenario from like currently a 5% vacancy rate, even if it went up to 35, that's not great. But that's actually quite normal for a lot of markets around the world. So there certainly is some cushion in this market to have a little bit more vacancy than we've had in the past. And in fact, it would be probably pretty healthy to get that vacancy rate, generally speaking, closer to 10% rather than the low single digits has been for the last 8 or 9 years. If we do see that happening, yeah, and the demand between the POGO and just, you know, slower demand for the BPO sector, if we see that happening, well, the first thing to think is, well, rents will fall a bit, and that's probably true. The other concessions like tenant improvement allowances, we'll start to see more creativity in that regard. We may see a little bit more movement to the provinces as well, just for cost-cutting measures, but I don't expect to see a ton of that. I think instead they just kind of, the new construction starts on office buildings for, let's say, whatever is planned for 2024 or 2025, those will probably go on hold, and that the existing construction projects for office buildings will continue. And then that will just kind of, whatever finishes, will just kind of be the amount of stock from now for probably the next 2 to 3 years. And we just won't see as much new stock come online. And then the demand for space will just kind of take up chunks of that as we go, slower than we're used to. But that's the way that we're deal with an oversupply issue, is just keep the existing stock on the market until it eventually gets taken up at a slower rate, and then not have the usual 500,000 up to 1 million square meters of new office space that has been coming onto the market every year for a long time now. We'll probably see that start to slow down quite a bit as early as maybe 2023, and certainly by 2024, 2025.
My association with the Philippine landlord and developer space is that it's almost an oligarchy. There's a lot of very big families, very big, powerful corporations that are building all of these buildings. I'm sure they will be fine out of all this. But what is the real landscape like? Are there a lot of mid-tier developers, small tier developers that actually won't be able to handle this economic pressure, and they're all going to be gone as all of this washes over?
I suppose there could be some small, especially the boutique developers, who just aren't all that well capitalized. You know, they wanted to get into it. Usually they made their money in a different industry. Could be FS moving consumer goods, or could be industrial. But anyway, they've got some money. They wanted to do an office building investment. Took out some money to do so. Those boutique developers could be challenged, especially if they hadn't had time to lease up their buildings yet. So if they were in the middle of a pre-lease, you know, the building is close to done or done, but you're less than halfway leased out because that's just the normal process. And now all of a sudden you've got debt service, but not a lot of rental income. There could be some problems there. But as you said, the bigger developers, not only have they benefited from a market that's been 95%+ occupied, meaning that most of their buildings are occupied, meaning that most they're still collecting rent for almost everything they own. That's quite good for them. Also, as you mentioned, a lot of them are conglomerates who have businesses who just generate a lot of cash that also supports the company as a whole. So for that reason, they are in better shape, and we could see. It hasn't necessarily been the MO of these big developers, but acquisitions, buying up small and medium-sized developers, buildings that are distressed. We could see acquisitions along those lines, but it depends on if big developers, you know, often want to go after small buildings, whether that's even worth their time or whether they just focus on large projects. That's yet to be seen. The good news is, I guess in this regard, is that because so much development is done by the top, let's say, 10 big developers in this country, I think that protects the industry a lot more than if things were a little bit more leveled out and you had a lot of firms that weren't so profitable and had debt and were just always, you know, trying to make sure that they have their debt service covered. We see that certainly more so in the developed world, I think, and that would be more concerning for me. In the Philippines, it's just the opposite. So in that regard, it's good, I guess.
Morgan, I really appreciate all of your insight into this critical piece of the outsourcing puzzle. Is there anything that I should have asked, or any advice that you think people need to consider, or just anything, any of your observations about the situation we're currently in?
Yeah, I would just say, because you're probably going to have, I know your audience is a lot of Philippine BPOs, and you know they're probably, if they haven't yet, they're considering approaching their landlords to talk about what can be done. I'd always advise you, and this is a bit self-serving, but talking to a real estate expert before you approach the landlord always helps. And that's because, you know, the experts understand not only what one single client of ours is doing, but we know that what all of our clients are doing, and we know what all of our colleagues' clients are doing, and you end up gathering a lot of market information and a lot of comparables, that information can be used in any discussion with a landlord, help the landlord understand what's been going on in the market, comparable, let's say, deferments or whatnot that has been offering. And you only get that by collecting enough information, which is tough to do if you're a BPO and you only really understand the scope of your own business. But the other thing is, you know, it's just, it's a conversation, it's a negotiation. And so I'd advise firms, you know, to think about approaching their landlords and saying, okay, well, here is what would work for us. You as our landlord, please tell us what would work for you as well, right? Because understanding what the landlord needs is going to be important to getting anything done during this lockdown period. And if you just say, hey, landlord, I want this, that, and the other, and don't really understand their position, you're not going to get very far. And professional negotiators get this because we do it all the time, but people who don't negotiate often tend to only think about what they need, and I think they're going to have worse results. So I'd just encourage you to reach out either to me or to whoever your advisor is and come up with a plan to approach your landlord, and I think you'd see better results.
Amazing. Thank you, Morgan. And of course, this is probably a good time to, if anyone wants to reach out to you or know more, how can they do that?
I think email is best, thank you. And I'm guessing that somewhere within the text of this posting, you will please put my email address. It's a little, my name is Morgan McGilvray, and it's a bit of a mess of an email address. So it's easier to just copy paste it or click through it than it is to write it down. But send me an email. I respond, you know, within 10 minutes usually. And just tell me what's going on, and I'd be glad to help.
Fantastic. We'll put that, of course, in the show notes. Thank you so much, Morgan.
All right, Derek, thank you so much as well.
That was Morgan McGilvray of Santos Knight Frank. If you want to get in touch with Morgan or find anything else about what we talk about in this episode, go to our show notes, which is at outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just send us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.